Unfortunately, when it comes to ending hunger, we are not on track to achieve SDG 2 by 2030.
Meet Valerie Bashir, senior statistician at the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations.
But the initial preliminary assessment done last year suggests that the COVID-19 pandemic could add 83 to 132 million more people suffering from undernourishment. So this is, the situation is quite bad at the moment. So we need to double our effort to take care of this target if we want to meet it.
So right now, the facts are not very encouraging. And the way to reverse the trend on our way to 2030 requires, food. But to put food on the table, we have to go back to the source and work with the people producing it, ensuring their quality of life, sustainability and resilience, renewing and securing the world's food systems from the ground up. We are now in the decade of action, and here we'll talk with companies and experts from all over the world about how they're taking actions on the SDGs. To learn from each other about the challenges, opportunities and solutions on the road towards 2030. From the GRI, this is The Rising Tide. Episode on SDG 2, Zero Hunger. So looking at the numbers, how much would it cost to end hunger?
Yeah, in terms of funding gap, so we have made an assessment in FAO in partnership with the Center for Development Research at the University of Bonn in Germany. And they say that ending hunger would require a total annual investment in a range of about 39 to 50 billion US dollars. So that's a huge funding gap. If we look at official development aid, so here we're talking about mainly OECD country, helping developing country. At the moment, those numbers are $17 billion that are invested in the agri-food sector at the moment annually. This would need, of course, almost to double. Realistically, if we could add from the G7 to increase their commitment from 11 to 14 billion. But there would still be a gap. And this is where the national government and the private sector play an important role.
While there is a need to fill the funding gap, it is not only about finding the financial resources, but also about finding long-lasting solutions. So let's move on to a real-life case where food-producing companies taking the matter into its own hands to create this kind of lasting solution. Let's meet Juliana and Maria Clara from Grupo Nutresa.
First of all, I'd say that social and environmental responsibility have been part of Grupo Nutresa for a long time.
We're listening to Juliana Meneses, sustainability manager at Grupo Nutresa.
But in the decade of 2010-2020, it became, the outer layer of our strategy. So it became kind of the framework that shaped all our strategy. That was quite an achievement, because what it meant is that all the decisions, actions, strategies, goals should be seen through the lens of sustainability.
And then it comes the foundation. So you say, okay, why a private company, a private sector should have a foundation, and what is our role? And I will say we are the part of the company, because we are not a foundation that is not linked to the organization. We are very into understand the organization, but also we are very into to understand our stakeholders.
Meet Maria Clara Pietrahita, Executive Director of the Nutresa Foundation.
So I will say that our role is to bridging between the needs of the corporation, of our companies, and the communities that are related to us or that link it and we can help. So we are reaching and we are connecting these two worlds, the company, the private sector world, and the community. That's the first, one of the first roles we have on the foundation. And the second is to give life, to keep bring to life that big purpose of Blue Puno Tresa, of building a better world where development is for everyone. Okay? So we are like the hands of Grupo Nutresa in order to make that big dream of that big endeavor reality.
This is where the idea of creating lasting solutions from the ground up comes into play. What Nutresa is doing is more like that old saying, you give a man a fish and you feed him for a day, but if you teach him how to fish, you can feed him for a lifetime.
And I will add something very important to that endeavor is that that beaching has a special concrete or a special material to make that bridging between companies and communities, and is capability development. That's our main goal. So if you say, okay, what is the role of foundation, of the Nutresa Foundation in all these sustainability strategy? And I will say the main thing is a capability development.
And this is not just about implanting foreign values and developing what we think is best. This is all based on the specific needs, resources, and sustainability challenges that each community is facing.
And we say, okay, who are our suppliers? Or what is the problem with them? So then we start to work with the communities, with the suppliers, with rural producers, and we also working with them towards reducing the food, the waste that is with our farmers, for example. There is a huge problem there in the countryside. So we are placing some actions with them in order to first bring awareness about the problem, what is happening, because sometimes there's not awareness of that. And then to understand it from an environmental and social perspective, what we have to do, okay? What are the type of markets we can do for those products, local markets of exchange, what we call here in Colombia, trueque, also, of have this product, you have all the products, how we can exchange that and generate like local economies that allow these farmers to give some value to those products that normally can be to the waste. And I'm going to put an example of a cashew. The cashew is an almond that we use in our process. But this is like a little piece of almond, but it has a huge apple. We call it an apple, but it's not an apple, but it has a huge fruit. And it's almost 70% of the product. That product was going to the waste, but it has a lot of antioxidants. And we sit down with the farmers and understand, well, what is the value of this thing that you're wasting? And what is the thing that you can do? So we bring some researchers to the table, we bring another company, for example, beverage companies, and we try to understand what we can do with that. And now we are developing an innovation program in order to bring develop a drink based on this, so the producers can sell that product to other organizations and can create like use that waste that was going to the trees, and it can be food. That's an example of how we're working in reducing the food loss and the food waste with farmers and with our suppliers.
When Adam Smith, considered the father of modern economics, questioned the value of self-sufficient economies, it was generally rejected. But maybe when it comes to rural communities involved in producing food for everyone, the case for self-sufficiency can be made again. But maybe when it comes to rural communities involved in producing food for everyone, the case for self-sufficiency can be made again. Because even though commerce is critical for markets and economies to work, the COVID-19 pandemic showed us that it also makes us more vulnerable to disruptions, and even more so for rural and low-income communities. So self-sufficiency should also be on everyone's radar for building more resilient food value change. And Nutresa has been doing something very exciting about it.
But then we realized also that the main income comes from that crop, but they also need extra income. So what we did is we created a program called Germinar, that basically what it does is produce their own food. So how a farmer can have his cacao, can have his coffee, can have whatever his main crop, but also in the same farm, how he can produce other food to eat by himself, that's one of the roads, or to sell in the local market, or to produce to the local school. That's something we realize. So what we do is we do understand the communities and we help them to create systems of producing local access to food.
But then I think it's important also to mention that we've been working on encouraging sustainable lifestyles among different stakeholders. We mean our own consumers, but we mean also our rural communities and these low-income communities we work with. And that's very important, because what people always think is that hunger and undernutrition or obesity is food industry's fault, but not necessarily. It's like we need to understand that this, even if we had enough food, but if we don't know how to consume it, if we don't know how to have a healthy lifestyle, then we will have nourishing problems. So that's one of the programs I would like to mention. We work very hard on encouraging and promoting and communicating and giving information about the importance of adopting sustainable lifestyles. And this goes again beyond. This goes again beyond the food itself.
To have a chance at eliminating hunger by 2030, some cultural changes will have to happen. From healthier eating and local sourcing to capability development for rural communities. If we want to reverse the bleak picture we heard about at the start of this episode, this is the kind of endeavor we have to undertake. For this to happen, the first step is understanding each other.
There are two things that we learned from this journey of working to tackle zero hunger. And the first thing is would be the perspective of capability development. I would say that's the main thing. And building or helping the communities to find their own capabilities is a journey that takes time, but especially it takes understanding the communities and helping and understanding the companies what has to offer. And I'm not talking about money. Sure, there's investment that has to be done. But the main thing I would say is resources. And I'm going to put this as an example. When we start to work with a community with indigenous community in La Sierra Nevada in Colombia, when we understand that, we first bring some people from the community to talk and to understand what was the need and to talk and to really understand what we need. They needed. And at the end, what we understood of those 6 months that took the negotiations to understand where to put the coffee and where to put the onions and the beans took 6 months to get to an agreement. But it was a process that was so important because it requires the people from the trade and people from the community to agree upon what we needed. And that was time. That was understanding the other, understanding the needs of the other, and understanding the needs of the organization.
And with that kind of understanding, what follows is the ideal way to build something new.
And the second one, I would say innovation. Innovation is a very good track, and it really is an expert in innovation. She's teaching us a lot of things about. But I will say the innovation can result in small things. Going back to the example of the cocoa farmers in La Sierra Nevada, the indigenous community, we create a system to fertilize with organic things the orchard and the production of the products. We use the technology of the community. They have a knowledge what to use, and we also start to develop like different things. And they have like a community factory that they produce their own fertilizers for the orchard. And we create like innovation, a low cost innovation. But if you are there, if you understand the reality and the resources the company has, that's the way you can tackle these problems of zero hunger through capability development as a process. And second, innovation. And innovation can be a process that can be done on the ground. And you need to understand the resources the company has and the resources the community has. And when you put those things together, great things can happen. So I will add to those two learnings that were very important for us, and it took us time to learn it.
Finally, what the whole planet has been going through since the start of 2020 can present a significant opportunity for all kinds of organizations to start putting more effort into SDG2 true recovery plans. Because there are a lot of resources that can be directed towards capability development for resilience and lasting changes to the food system that could also help restart the economy.
Yeah, we have a new private sector strategy to really engage more with the private sector, but we still very much collaborating with national government. But we're trying to bridge the gap, you know, between the private sector and the government, and also really involve them in more and more in funding our project or identifying business opportunities in country. So we have this huge hand-in-hand initiative. And I think in some country, the COVID-19 recovery plan offer a huge opportunity to improve this private public sector partnership in improving or increasing financing in the sector. So if we think about projects that could improve rural development, so that could bring, you know, better access of local farmers or smallholders farmers to the market, investment in transitioning to more sustainable agriculture also could be in the recovery plans. And of course, making, investing to reduce food losses and waste and the whole sustainability from farm to fork.
The kind of innovation we need to achieve SDG2 has to come from every direction, from the big food producing companies to the small communities sowing the fields of the world. So let's work together on finding ways to reduce food waste and food loss. Let's invest in local sustainability to ensure that no one is left behind. And let's work on understanding how we can improve the way from farm to fork. The Rising Tide podcast is co-produced by the GRI and Naranja Media. We want to thank Valerie Bichier, Juliana Meneses, and Maria Clara Pietraita for sharing their time and expertise. We also want to thank the Swedish government for making this podcast series possible. We greatly appreciate their long-standing support for sustainable development work, catalyzing action towards the SDGs.